Good morning, California. It is Wednesday, July 1st, 2015. You are on OC Talk Radio, and of course, it's Wednesday morning, so you're in the city square. This is your host, Jerry Amante, here as always with our engineer and everyman, Mr. Paul Roberts.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Proud to be here today.
And you know, this is a special week. This is Independence Week. This Saturday, we will celebrate the 239th birthday of this nation.
So. Wow.
Big week for us, and so we've decided, the producers and sponsors of the show, to dedicate this entire show to the birth of this great nation. So we have a really special show for you with things that we think will inspire you. We hope it helps you begin to celebrate the anniversary of the birth of this great and exceptional nation in a way that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise, and maybe provokes a thought or two from you as we tell you some stories that you may have heard and maybe have never heard.
You mean there's more to the holiday than the fact that the Honda dealers have a sale going on this weekend?
Or that we're going to be going to parades and barbecuing,
yeah.
and having friends over and of course enjoying fireworks. And no, there is more to it than that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. So what are we going to do? We're going to do something that's really sort of unheard of in the media. We're going to actually entertain you with the Declaration of Independence in a way you may not have heard it before, and I mean the entirety of it. And then we're going to talk to you a little bit about those authors, those brave dozens of men gathered in Philadelphia one hot summer who changed the course of human history and actually changed philosophically the way we look at ourselves and our rights and privileges and honors and freedoms.
How many people have really read the entire Declaration of Independence? And if you have, when was the last time?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Paul, and it's something that you should be asking yourselves as you listen, listeners. When's the last time you actually sat down and read it? And today you'll have an opportunity to have it read to you in a very dramatic way that'll be, I think, very moving. And then we're going to talk a little bit, as I said, about those signers. Then I'm going to tell you a little bit about some more up-to-date local modern heroes of our country, and we're going to leave you with a gift at the end I don't want to tell you about now that we hope will launch you into your weekend in a very special way. So it's all about the 4th. It's all about this exceptional nation.
And the story of America.
And the story of America. And it all comes about right here in the city square right after this. Hi, this is Jerry Amante on behalf of HERO, the HERO program. What is it? Well, it's a way for you to make sure that you have energy efficiency or water conservation at an affordable price. Don't think you can afford solar? Don't think you can change your hot water heater to a tankless one? Nonsense. Just call and find out more about the HERO program. It's available in more than 21 Orange County jurisdictions alone and in other places as well. Visit them at heroprogram.com. All one word, heroprogram.com. Start saving today. All right, and so we're back. Now, let me lay a little background for this and then a little bit about the source of this reading, and then we'll just let you enjoy
it. This is pretty cool. This is actually pretty cool what's coming up.
In the summer of the 1770s, the colonies had long suffered many tyrannical abuses from the British Crown, and all of you know sort of the events that led up to the birth of the nation, and the fact that in that summer in Philadelphia, in Independence Hall, dozens of men, delegates of the 13 colonies, gathered in a room with shuttered doors and windows and guards out front to watch out for British soldiers who roamed freely through the colonies at the order of the Crown and could have picked up any of them for sedition and tyranny and put them to instant death. And instead, they gathered there and debated and argued and honed and crafted what Thomas Jefferson then inked and you're about to hear. Picture now these patriots gathered against what was the most powerful empire in the world. At that time, the British had colonies around the globe, and it was said that the sun never set on the British Empire. They were enormously powerful. King George, incredibly powerful as a ruler, and he had the most powerful army and navy known to man. And there are these dozens of patriots gathered in this hot room in a hot, humid day. If you're in California today in July of 2015,
you know a little bit what it was like.
You
yeah.
know a little bit of what Philadelphia felt like, and they weren't in Hawaiian shirts and an air conditioning.
No.
There's no such thing. And so out of that comes this document that we will play for you now, read to you in a dramatic fashion by people, and you'll recognize some of these voices, Michael Douglas and Whoopi Goldberg and Renee Zellweger and Mel Gibson and others who are reading as they stand in the very room where the Declaration was formed among the green tablecloth tables of the founders in Independence Hall and read to you this: the Declaration of Independence, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. Here is your declaration.
When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them.
A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government.
Laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes.
And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed.
But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government.
The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states.
To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world.
He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good.
He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them.
He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable only to tyrants.
He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures.
He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people.
He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within.
He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands.
He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers.
He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries.
He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance.
He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures.
He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power.
He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation.
For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us.
For protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states.
For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. For imposing taxes on us without our consent.
For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses.
For abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies.
For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments.
For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever.
He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us.
He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people.
He is, at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy of the head of a civilized nation.
He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands.
He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions.
In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people.
Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us.
We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here.
We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity.
And we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence.
They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends.
We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled,
appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies solemnly publish and declare
that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states.
That they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown.
And that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved.
And that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce.
And to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do.
And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence,
we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
And we're back. How about that for a powerful piece of writing?
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That is the beautiful prose of Thomas Jefferson constructed out of that Continental Congress by 56 delegates from the 13 colonies. And I think sometimes we think about the Declaration of Independence as a nice piece of writing from a time long before our experience, and we don't think about what was at stake. I said before we went into the Declaration, Paul, that this was a time when the British Empire was enormously powerful and had complete control over and dominion over all of its territory.
At its height.
At its very height. And these 56 men gathered in Philadelphia that summer in July of 1776 were at risk. They had a lot to risk. So I found a piece that talks a little bit about them, and I thought it would be interesting for all of us to think for a moment of who they were and what they did and what they suffered. So
you mean there were more than just Jefferson, Adams, and Hamilton? I can come up with about five or six,
There were
not 56.
Well, this is a story that I know some know, but hasn't been told necessarily. So listen to a bit about these 56 signers of the Declaration in that room that day. You may have wondered what happened to those 56 men. Five signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons serving in the Revolutionary Army, and another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 signers fought and died from wounds or hardships during the Revolutionary War. They signed and pledged, as you heard, their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. What kind of men do that? 24 were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers and large plantation owners. Each men of means, well educated. But they signed the Declaration of Independence, knowing full well that the penalty would be death if they were captured. Carter Braxton of Virginia was a wealthy planter and trader. He saw his ships swept from the seas by the British Navy. He sold his home and his properties to pay his debts, and he died in rags. Thomas McKean was so hounded by the British that he was forced to move his family almost constantly throughout the colonies. He served in the Congress without pay. His family was kept in hidings. His possessions were taken from him, and poverty was his reward. Vandals or soldiers looted the properties of Dillery, Hall, Clymer, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Middleton. At the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson Jr. noted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the Nelson home for his headquarters. He quietly urged George Washington to open fire, and the home was destroyed, and Nelson died bankrupt. Francis Lewis had his home and properties destroyed. The enemy jailed his wife, and she died within a few months. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying. Their 13 children fled for their lives. His fields and his gristmill were laid to waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves, returning home to find his wife dead, his children vanished. Some of us take some of these liberties for granted that we have, but we shouldn't. We should think for a few minutes each 4th of July about those 56 men and remember that freedom is never free. So that's just a little bit about some of them. In the end, some 50 years later from that summer of 1776, we get to two final signers who are famous. They are two among the 56 that remained alive 50 years to the date of the signing. So now here you are, July 4th, 1826. The nation has survived. It's 50 years old. And on that day, President John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who were patriots together, who were political opponents in the race for the presidency at one time, and then late in life became correspondents and wrote a series of beautiful letters to one another over the last 14 years of their lives, talking about the Republic, found themselves invited each on multiple occasions to all kinds of celebrations at the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration on that July 4th of 1826. But neither could attend either any of these events, because they both lay dying on their deathbeds on that day, about to meet their maker. Adams at age 90 in Quincy in Massachusetts, while the country celebrated, is noted to have spoken his last words that at least Thomas Jefferson survives. Unfortunately, President Adams was mistaken, as President Jefferson had died 5 hours earlier at the age of 82, mentioning that he took solace in Adams' survival. The last two surviving patriots of the magnificent declaration you just heard joined each other in death as they had joined each other as patriots at the founding of the nation. 50 years to the day they signed that document. We'll be right back. City leaders, are you worried about how you're going to maintain the inventory of trees in your town for decades to come? No need to worry. Call West Coast Arborists. For more than 200 cities in California, they maintain that urban forest inventory in a way in which your citizens will enjoy them for years to come. Your costs are maintained and your trees are beautiful. West Coast Arborists, WCAinc.com or 714-991-1900. We care about your urban forest.
Hi, I'm Mark Austin, a partner at the law firm of Rattan & Tucker. With roots in Orange County tracing back to 1906, Rattan is the county's largest full-service civil law firm with particular expertise in the field of public agency law. Today, Rattan's attorneys successfully represent scores of cities and other public agencies, as well as many developers and other private clients, as they navigate California's complex governmental regulations, land use laws, and environmental laws, including the California Environmental Quality Act and many others. For more information about how Rattan can assist you, call me, Mark Austin, at 714-662-4677. That's 714-662-4677. Visit us online at Rattan.com. That's Rutan.com.
All right, and welcome back after that to the City Square. It's July 1st, and we are celebrating the birth of our nation. So much to talk about, Mr. Roberts, after hearing that. But I'm interested in your first impression as the everyman hearing the Declaration that way.
It chokes me up. It really does. I don't want to sound corny about it, but I
you can be corny. It's 4th of July.
I hadn't heard this in a long, long time. And what struck me, what first amazed me, is the fact that they laid out all of these grievances in a lawyerly fashion.
Yeah.
They didn't just say, we hereby declare independence. It was more than just taxation without representation. They really had quite a list of grievances that have somehow gotten obscured through the years.
We soundbite up, I think, sometimes what our founders really suffered through, what the colonists went through, and how much they struggled trying, as British subjects, to try to work with the crown to resolve some of these issues and some of the concerns they had over a long period of time before they ever found themselves gathered there in Philadelphia to declare independence. This was, as the words of the Declaration, so beautifully written by Thomas. I mean, such a genius at 32 to ink something like this.
Well, who writes like that anymore? Eloquent, flowing language.
Nobody writes like that anymore. Such beautiful English. But he writes about the fact that people will long suffer so long as the evils are sufferable, right? Just not to break the binds of those kinds of institutions to which they've grown accustomed. These were British people who were used to the consanguinity, as they say, between their kindred spirits in England. They wanted to be able to get along, right? I mean, they came and emigrated for religious freedom, and they knew that they were subject to the crown, but they wanted to have their own independence and their own way to govern within their own colonies.
And it's hard to put it in perspective, because today we would laugh at the notion that God appointed our leaders. But that's really what people believed for centuries, that you were given a king by God, and he had the divine right, he or she had the divine right to rule. God gave you your leaders.
Yeah, your king or your emperor, and certainly your powers came from the crown and from the government, not from the people. And listen to the beauty of something new. This is the magnificence, I think, of the Declaration, and probably the point I think is probably most significant about it, in my mind anyway. And that's that they say in that line we so often quote, we pull out of all of this beautiful prose by Jefferson, that we hold certain truths to be self-evident, that men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit
endowed
of happiness.
Endowed by God, not given to you by
your
government.
Right. It was the first time articulated in the history of mankind that government derives its power from the people who derive it from divine providence. Nobody had ever articulated that before. That was the beauty of what they constructed, a philosophy about government that permeates to today. To 2015, we're still having arguments
over
this. And
that was the opposite. People at the time believed, honestly, truly, from the bottom up, that government was given to you by God, and right. that they had... Where did they derive their power? They derived their power from God,
right?
And therefore, you were subject right. to their rule.
And here, the founders in, you know, a hot summer in Philadelphia in 1776, and by some stories, it was pretty hot in that room too because they had to keep it shuttered, and there was no air conditioning, and they couldn't even get a breeze. And of course, it didn't stop Benjamin Franklin, apparently, even suffering with gout from putting his foot up on his desk, but continuing to drink rum because that's what they had to cool themselves off. They gathered there and they formed this new philosophical view that no, divine providence provides the individual with rights. He has the inalienable
Every
rights.
Man
he
a
grants
king.
Them to government. Every yeah. man his own king, exactly. And that's the thread upon which our nation is built. And for that, as you heard in my other piece, the 56 of them, some of them suffered mightily. Not everybody became the second and third president like Adams and Jefferson, who lasted 50 years to the day of the signing. Many of them died in poverty, imprisoned in the war itself, lost their families, all that they had.
And I hate to put religious overtones this, but being a good Irish Catholic, I can't help
you can't help yourself.
I knew this before today, that the last two surviving people from that died. It happened to be the two of the most famous, our right. second and third president.
Right, could have been anyone.
And that they died together
right.
50 years later yeah. on that same day. I mean, isn't yeah. that a bit ironic? Doesn't that seem a little preordained almost or something?
And the interesting thing to me, Paul, about that is, and something for us to noodle about a little bit, and then we'll take a break and come back and tell you about some modern-day American heroes on the 4th to help you
the
continue
story
the celebration.
Yes.
We'll keep telling stories today. But the story that I want to leave you with before we take this break about the two of them that Paul raised, having passed away 50 years to the day of having signed the Declaration, is remember they both started out, Paul, as Federalists, right? Both believing in the fact that there was a need and a urgency to the formation of a new nation.
And a strong central government.
And to believe in the you know centralized power to you know act as a force against the British
crown. To act as one and not 13 independent, as they right. declared here, independent states.
Right. Right,
Didn't have to come together. It could have been 13 countries.
Yeah, but they decided to be the 13 United States of America from whence our name, right?
Right.
And then they drifted, right? Then they each had their own views over time. They even became political opponents in the presidency, the election when Adams won and Jefferson lost, and he became the second president. And on the eve of Jefferson ascending to the presidency, when Adams was about to hand it off to him, Adams, of course, does last-minute appointments to all kinds of people, which caused great political rift between them. And the two men became actually bitter political enemies
yes.
and no longer great friends. And then late in their life, in the last 14 years of their life, remember, Adams dies at 90, 8 years older than Jefferson, who died at 82. They had been 40 and 32 at the Constitutional Convention. And then in those last 14 years, Adams reaches out and sends a couple of letters to Jefferson imploring him to answer and to talk about the country that they developed and what they had seen over the decades that ensued.
Feeling the need to reconcile and to reflect on what they had given birth to.
Right,
to create.
Right. You know, recognizing they were the last two survivors of something so unique in history of man that they ought to talk amongst themselves. And he doesn't hear back for a couple of letters, and then when he gets a letter back, it says, you know, in its own beautiful prose that Jefferson can write and no one else can repeat, and I'll do a terrible paraphrase on, so I'll just tell you its intent. He says, "Don't ever think that my failure to respond in a timely way to your first letters meant that I was uninterested in rekindling our bond. Don't ever believe that. This is what you know kept me from doing so, and here's how I feel about this." And they begin this letter writing that lasts for a decade and a half. So important was that rekindling of the bond that Adams is reported to have told his family that he wanted the letter read aloud on Sunday morning at breakfast one day after having received it. So then they rebind and they write to one another in these beautiful letters that are great reading about the nation they birthed. And then 50 years to the date of signing it. For some reason, and maybe this is the strain of Catholicism in us that is buried in us by the nuns as they make you think like this. It's as if the Lord says, "Okay, you'd done your work. It's 50 years later. It seems to be stable. Time for you both to come home." And he takes them both on the same day. Just unbelievable.
Together.
So when you celebrate this weekend, as you will, with parades and fireworks and barbecues, and you should do all of it because that's the appropriate thing to do at the birthday party for our nation. Remember the 56 men and what they gave up, and the two that remained and the day they left, and the beauty of that prose that we're endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some modern-day heroes and tell you a little bit more about why you should have something special to celebrate this Saturday, Independence Week in the City Square.
I'm on the observation deck of the Empire State Building to demonstrate how much material Waste Management recycles. As North America's largest residential recycler, last year alone, Waste Management recycled 12.9 million tons. How much is that? Let's do the math. Carry the 6. It's enough to fill this building more than 27 times. With experience like that, we're bound to have a program that can help your business recycle. Talk to Waste Management or visit thinkgreen.com.
All right, we're back. You know what? One more comment I just got to make on...
Well, who could stop you? You're an independent and free person.
Everybody's cringing right now here. But, you know, the other thing that struck me as I listened to you explain that so eloquently about the last days of Jefferson and Adams is this. We tend to think of the founding fathers as one cohesive group, that they never fought. They never disagreed. They saw everything right the same way. They all wrote this document, and they all went, "That sounds pretty good," and they all signed it. There was a lot of fighting. There was a lot of disagreement.
Yep.
And what can we learn from that? That they felt at the end the need to reconcile and come together.
Yeah, and that, in fact, in spite of the differences, and they were...
Dramatic.
They were bitter political enemies a long time after the signing of the Constitution and had different views of how the country should be governed and the like.
Because they were creating something new that nobody had ever seen before. They didn't have all the answers. They figured it out as it went along, and that created political divisions, deep divisions that maybe to a certain degree continue to this day, of government.
They're certainly no different than today, right? I mean, there couldn't be any more division back then at the founding and the struggle for what it would be like than there are, you know, some 239 years later. But it would be nice if we had leaders who emulated them, who spoke with such prose and dignity and clarity
and respect for one another.
And respect, right? That they could converse about the most important of subjects in ways that are at a higher level than we generally hear in common discourse.
Things
today.
They felt very passionate about and disagreed very deeply about.
And that despite divisions, they knew that even though they might disagree about the how, they agreed in the what.
Right.
And I think we lose that sometimes today. So that's a good observation from the everyman.
Wow.
So they birthed this nation, and it goes on for many, many years, and it's defended over time.
Too bad we haven't had more heroes through the years like those guys.
Yeah, well, we've had a few. So
have we? Okay.
What a great segue. So let me tell you a story that I heard as someone said it one day doing the Pledge of Allegiance, and I asked for a copy of it, and I've kept it. Over the years, I've used it in a couple of places at the appropriate time as an introduction to saying the Pledge of Allegiance, because I think we forget on the 4th of July when we do things like stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance, what the Pledge of Allegiance really means and what it means to those who have fought and defended it. Certainly, our country has been blessed throughout the ages, from the earliest days of its founding to its current day, with great sacrifice among our people who serve in the armed services and defend our country and, in fact, defend freedom around the world. And John McCain is no exception. I don't always agree with John. I sometimes disagree with his politics, and he and I will see eye to eye on some things and definitely be 180 degrees on others. But one thing can be said of him with certainty by everyone, whether they agree with him or not, and that's that John McCain's a patriot and that he served with distinction and honor. And many of you know he spent a number of years in a prisoner of war camp in Vietnam.
Leaving him permanently disfigured and disabled.
Right.
Really,
to this day, you notice when he speaks, he can't lift his arms too high because of the torture that he suffered at the hands of the North Vietnamese.
He was a pilot, right?
He was a pilot, Navy pilot. And he tells this story as he's about to lead a Pledge of Allegiance, and I will read it in the words of the senator as the senator said them, because I don't want to spin it at all. So this is John McCain making remarks about the Pledge of Allegiance at a time that he is about to ask all to join him in it. And as you say the Pledge of Allegiance this fourth, or from that, for that matter, any time you hear it said...
Think of it from John McCain's perspective.
Think of it from his perspective, and think of the young man that he talks about, who is an example of many, many veterans, and you will hear about him here. John McCain says, "As you may know, I spent 5.5 years as a prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. In the early years of our imprisonment, the NVA, the North Vietnamese Army, kept us in solitary confinement or two or three men to a cell. In 1971, however, the NVA moved us from these conditions of isolation into large rooms with as many as 30 or 40 men to a room. This was, as you can imagine, a wonderful change and was the direct result of the efforts of millions of Americans on behalf of a few hundred POWs 10,000 miles from home. One of the men who moved into my room was a young man named Mike Christian. Mike came from a small town near Selma, Alabama. He didn't wear a pair of shoes until he was 13 years old. At 17, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy. Bear with me. He later earned a commission by going to officer training school. Then he became a naval flight officer, and he was shot down over Vietnam and captured in 1967. Mike had a keen and deep appreciation of the opportunities this country and our military provide for people who want to work hard and want to succeed. As part of the change in treatment, the Vietnamese allowed some prisoners to receive packages from home, and some of these packages were handkerchiefs or scarves or other items of clothing. Mike got himself a bamboo needle. Over a period of a couple months, he created an American flag and sewed it to the inside of his shirt. Every afternoon, before we had a bowl of soup, we would hang Mike's shirt on the wall of the cell and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, I know the Pledge of Allegiance may not seem like the most important part of your day now, but I can assure you that in that stark cell, it was indeed the most important and meaningful event. One day, the Vietnamese searched our cell, as they did periodically, and they discovered Mike's shirt with the flag sewn inside, and they removed it. That evening, they returned, opened the door of the cell, and for the benefit of all of us, grabbed Mike Christian, took him out, and for the next several hours, beat him severely. Then they opened the door of the cell and threw him in. We cleaned him up as well as we could. The cell in which we lived had only a concrete slab in the middle of the room on which we slept, and dirt floors elsewhere, and four naked light bulbs hung in each corner of the room. As I said, we tried to clean up Mike as well as we could, and after the excitement died down, everybody tried to get rest. I looked in the corner of that room, and sitting there beneath a dim light bulb with a piece of red cloth, another shirt, and his bamboo needle was my friend Mike Christian. He was sitting there with his eyes almost shut from the beating he'd received, making another American flag. He was making the flag not because it made Mike Christian feel better. He was making the flag because he knew how important it was for all of us to be able to pledge allegiance to our flag and to our country. So the next time you say the Pledge of Allegiance, you must never forget the sacrifice and courage that thousands of Americans like Mike Christian have made to build our nation and to promote our freedom around the world. And you must remember our duty, our honor, and our country. So that is the story of a hero, Mike Christian, who I think when we say the pledge, we ought to think about, Paul.
Let's take a break and think about that. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jerry Amante on behalf of HERO, the HERO program. What is it? Well, it's a way for you to make sure that you have energy efficiency or water conservation at an affordable price. Don't think you can afford solar? Don't think you can change your hot water heater to a tankless one? Nonsense. Just call and find out more about the HERO program. It's available in more than 21 Orange County jurisdictions alone and in other places as well. Visit them at heroprogram.com. All one word, heroprogram.com. Start saving today. Well, thank you for that break.
I
hate telling that story that McCain tells of Mike Christian, because I've done it a few times in my life and I can never make it all the way through it without focused on what that kid was doing.
Gives you the goosebumps.
While
you're composing yourself here, let me throw in my own little story here. Yeah. Since I'll celebrate my own father who passed away 2 years ago, who was a World War II veteran.
One of the great generation.
Went off to fight the war, never been outside of Detroit in his whole life, and suddenly he's flying a bomber over Germany.
Yeah.
He told this story, I told it at his funeral, and this, I think, talks about the difference in generations. I don't know if we'd still do this, like you're talking about my Christian, like we're talking about the founders. Here's a story that I find amazing. I hope I don't choke up. My father goes over to seas. This is the early part of the war here. And for those of you who know World War II history, we started a daylight bombing campaign that people said couldn't be done. The British had tried it and lost horrendous numbers of airplanes. So my father and his group goes out and they start doing this in the middle of the day. The first mission he goes out on, 100 planes go out, 50 come back. 50% of the planes on his first mission.
Yeah.
And I asked my dad, I said, okay, I got how they got you to do it the first time, but how the heck did they get you to go out the second sorties? And he looked at me so shocked. I said, weren't you scared? Didn't you think this is like suicide? And he's like, but we had no choice.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean you have no choice? He said, we were there to do a job.
Right, right. It is that, you know, that feeling among not just the Greatest Generation, but every person who's ever put on the uniform from the time of the Revolutionary War to today who are serving all over the world. It's that self-sacrifice, that servant leadership of the young of our country who give up their youth to do that. It's just an amazing story. I have one more I want to tell.
Okay.
And this one is one that...
You're going to get me crying here.
I almost got myself doing it, talking about Mike Christian. I choked myself up over Senator McCain's story of his friend Mike. So this is one that Steve Grayshock found. You know, he searched high and low to find one about a Tustinite. But he tells me that I should read this. This is one that I read that's from a piece that Juanita Loverett wrote in the Orange County Register about Captain Nelson Holderman, who was perhaps the most decorated U.S. serviceman in World War I. Listen
and
to what he does.
And having been the former mayor of Tustin, did you know this story prior to this?
I did not know before Steve sent this to me. Upton C. and Myra Holderman, natives of Johnson County, Iowa, had lived in Nebraska for 20 years before they came to Tustin, California in 1893. They had three daughters, Uppy, Emma, and Lida, and one son, Myron, when they arrived. A second son was born November 10, 1885, and he was named Nelson Miles Holderman after Nelson Appleton Miles, a Civil War hero and a Medal of Honor recipient. So catch this. Nelson Holderman, born in Tustin, is named after a Medal of Honor recipient.
Names his child after a Medal of Honor
recipient.
Yeah, I think you can see where the story is going. Yeah.
Nelson began his military career as a private in Santa Ana's National Guard Unit, Company L. He served from June to October of 1916 on the Mexican border during the time of the Pancho Villa raids. In October of 1918, Company L was called into active service, and Nelson Holderman was sent to France under the command as a rank of captain. He then became involved in fierce battles in the Argonne Forest and earned the name the Lost Battalion after being cut off and surrounded by the enemy for 5 days. Official descriptions of the battle noted that Captain Holderman was wounded on October 4th, 5th, and 7th, although wounded on October 6th, on the third day after he'd been wounded twice. He rushed through machine gun fire from the enemy and shells that were fired all around him to carry two wounded men to safety. His actions and the actions of his company have been credited as the primary reason that the repeated German attacks in the Argonne failed to capture his position. Company L returned to a rousing welcome from the people of Santa Ana in April of 1919, and Captain Holderman received his own Medal of Honor and the Distinguished Service Cross. He also received two Croix de Guerre medals for courage from the French for leading his men. Hollywood has filmed his story, The Lost Battalion, twice, first in 1919, and a 2001 version had Adam James playing Captain Holderman and Rick Schroeder starring as his commanding officer, Major Whittlesey. After returning to Tustin, Captain Holderman rejoined the National Guard. Rejoined the National Guard as a Medal of Honor recipient. And was named Commandant of the Yountville Soldiers' Home in Yountville in 1926. Holderman worked tirelessly for veterans for more than 25 years, building new dorms and other facilities, including a hospital. And Captain Holderman and his wife, the former Marguerite Talbot, raised four children while living at the Soldiers' Home. He lived there until his death in 1953 and is buried in Golden Gate National Cemetery in San Bruno. So there, a little hometown story from my own Tustin.
And it's easy to think, well, this is war, and people do extraordinary things during times of war. But I think, again, as we all were touched, I can't help but think of the 9/11 attack and the falling towers and all those firemen and policemen who ran into a burning building knowing that it might collapse.
Right.
To rescue, I don't remember the exact number, but of the several thousand people killed, I think it wasn't like half of them were police and firemen.
Yeah, there was just, you know, it's that's enormous sacrifice that's made daily all around the country for us. I mean, there are people today as we sit here talking about honoring the nation on the occasion of its 239th birthday that are in uniforms and sweltering heat in the middle of a desert somewhere, defending our freedoms and people that they don't know and may never see again. And they do it with that same sacrifice your father and all of his comrades did when they walked out and flew that second sortie of missions, having lost half their comrades, or that Nelson Holderman did running into machine gun fire, or that Mike Christian exhibits sitting in the dim light of a bulb in the corner of a cell in Vietnam, sewing a flag he knows will get beaten, for which he'll get beaten for, and maybe even killed. And he does it not because of obstinance or stubbornness, but because he knows it's important to his comrades.
Or for fame, or glory, or money.
Or politics.
These are people who did this anonymously, who continue to this day to work anonymously on our behalf. And I think this is a time to honor all of them.
And so that brings us to a point where I'm going to give you a quote from Ronald Reagan, and then we're going to give you a gift for the beginning of your 4th of July weekend as we bring this show to a close. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, that quote from President Reagan and our gift to you from the City Square on Independence Week.
Hi, this is Jerry Amante on behalf of HERO, the HERO program. What is it? Well, it's a way for you to make sure that you have energy efficiency or water conservation at an affordable price. Don't think you can afford solar? Don't think you can change your hot water heater to a tankless one? Nonsense. Just call and find out more about the HERO program. It's available in more than 21 Orange County jurisdictions alone and in other places as well. Visit them at heroprogram.com. All one word, heroprogram.com. Start saving today.
All right. Thank you for those messages, sponsors, and for the ability to do this special show. No guests in the studio today, just us talking about our country.
Yeah.
And
they're heroes in my eyes just for letting us fund this and take this message to the people.
And telling you some stories that we hope you will take with you as you go into the weekend. We certainly want you to enjoy parades and barbecues and your families and have a good time and enjoy fireworks. There'll be tons of them. On my way in here today, I passed two firework stands. I know people are setting up for their nonprofits.
And I just want to interject that because this network and this show is all about storytelling. This isn't just to be infomercials. This isn't just to be educational. These programs are really to share stories that used to be shared in public spaces and public places. But because we don't seem to have those kinds of things, we don't seem to share those stories. When I was a kid, as we said offline, the 4th of July, in addition to fun and food and fireworks, was about sharing stories. The old men in the room got up and told stories of their
stories. What are you saying? That I'm the old man in the room telling stories this morning?
I think we're both kind of fitting that. But I think that's missing. I don't know that happens in the same way, that kind of tribal storytelling of sharing what we went through to get here takes place enough on these holidays.
I think
it's just a big sale.
Everybody thinks it's a big sale and a big opportunity for you to have a barbecue around the pool.
Right.
And it is all of that, but it is also the place of the City Square to sort of bring that kind of
discourse. It's all of those things because of the stories of people who came before. The people like your grandparents who came here without a penny in their pocket and risked everything to give their family
a new
life.
And really, by the fortunate birth, we're here. Many of us are fortunate just by the nature of where we were to be Americans, and we didn't actually choose it. Some of us actually chose it, like our ancestors did. So I want to leave you now with a gift from everyone at the City Square, all of us who work on producing the show, our sponsors, the staff, of course, of the Magnificent Association of California Cities, Lacey Kelly and all of her staff in their offices in Orange and our board. And then for all of you to know, that we wish you a happy 4th, that we hope you enjoy your holiday this weekend, and that you think a little bit about, as you say the pledge, somebody like a Mike Christian or a Nelson Holderman running into gunfire, or the magnificence of the prose of Thomas Jefferson. One of our presidents said, Ronald Reagan, "No arsenal, no weapon in the arsenals of the world is as formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women." We must remember all the time that we are the land of the free because we're the home of the brave. So here's our little gift to you from the city square to start your holiday weekend. Listen to this story and to this magnificent song, and happy 4th of July, America.
John Philip Sousa led the Marine Band to new heights of popularity during his tenure as leader from 1880 to 1892. It was during this era that he earned the title the March King, a well-deserved nickname that continues to this day. Of the 136 marches he composed, one has stood out above all the rest. It was composed in 1896 as Sousa sailed back home from a long European vacation. The inspiration for this march was born of a combination of homesickness, fond memories of his time as leader of the Marine Band, and his stirring recollection of the American flag flying over the White House. The resulting march became his best-known work, and in 1987, it officially became our national march. The Stars and Stripes Forever.